The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
All right, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you this morning. It is Friday, May 10th, and a little rainy out there this morning. Not too bad. We're going to hear the weather forecast in just a moment as well to find out what else is happening out there. We've got a great guest here for you this morning. Shirley Edgerton is here from Rites of Passage and Empowerment Program and many other things that Shirley is involved with, obviously, in the community for anyone who knows her. We're going to be talking about lots of different stuff, a very important trip coming up in July, and a couple other things. Looking forward to our conversation here this morning. First, let's go to the weather forecast, as I mentioned, and see if we can find out what how much rain, why don't we just say it, how much rain we're going to get in the next couple days. Here we go.
Berkshire weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, mostly cloudy. A chance of showers, mainly this morning. Highs in the upper 50s. East wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of rain 40%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Lows around 40. East wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Saturday, partly sunny. Highs in the lower 60s. East wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, see, that's not as bad as I thought. I thought we were going to get more rain than that. I was hearing that Mother's Day was going to be a bit rainy, but now I'm hearing that only rain in the morning, and then the rest of Mother's Day is going to be a little nicer. So that's on Sunday. If you haven't already gone out and gotten your mother something and made some plans for Mother's Day, do it now. It's Friday. This is your reminder. Remember what she did for you.
That's
so
right.
Yeah, take care of all the mothers there on Sunday. All right, welcome back again. Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM. Good morning, Shirley Edgerton. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Good, thank you, and thanks for being here this morning.
Oh, lovely morning.
It is morning. Somehow we make it at this time of the day so that so people can enjoy it on the radio. Rites of Empowerment Rites of Passage and Empowerment, ROPE program.
Yes.
Give us a quick brief on what that is and where it came from and then we'll get into some of the more specifics. I know we've talked about it before, but it bears repeating.
Oh, well, I love that conversation. So it's the Rites of Passage and Empowerment Program, and it's a mentoring program for girls. It started out for 12 to 18 years of age, but based on feedback from the girls, we have broadened the program now to include our alumni who are young women who graduated out of the program who are in college.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other end, we've extended it to include 9, 8 through 11-year-olds because we had a few parents that provided information and were basically saying they had children who could really benefit from the program. So when as I said, it's a mentoring program, one-on-one as well as group mentoring. All of the women are of African descent. Not necessarily of African descent. Most of them identify as of African descent, but it really is a group of professional women of color.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very specific because we recognize the fact that representation is important, and often the people our children come in contact with, they're like a mirror for them, you know, in order for them to understand that they can be, they often need to see themselves in that mirror.
Yeah.
And so that's why we've designed that like that.
The role model is so important, right?
Yes, and, absolutely.
Seeing themselves and what they can be.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the earlier, the better,
the
right?
The earlier, the better. Exactly.
Bringing it down to the eight-year-olds, I think that's a very critical time.
Yes.
When you're starting to sort of realize that you're part of the world and
that's right.
You start to wonder, you know, who you'll be.
Yeah. And then you have others defining you, you know, sometimes your classmates, you know, sometimes kids on the playground, and sometimes adults. Mm-hmm. So the idea of having a mentor to guide you and to reaffirm your existence and all these positive gifts and talents that you have is just a winner, yeah. You know?
So how many girls or students are in the cohort, if you will?
Well, at this point, we have about 30 girls.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's steadily growing. Mm. We have 5 ambassadors. That's the 8 through 11-year-olds. We have, 16 scholars. That's the main group. And then our alums are the college students, and we have 11. 2 of them are graduating this year from college, and we're very excited about that.
That's great.
Yeah, and we learned that, you know, as well, that you can't just prepare them to go to college and then leave them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
I guess they're okay. Let them go.
Exactly. Oh, they're grown now. You know, they've learned the lessons. They've had these relationships.
Just different challenges at different ages, right?
Absolutely.
And different things that life throws at you.
Yeah. And so a lot of our students were first generation. And then so we've exposed
first generation them, college students.
Yes. First generation college students. And so we've exposed them to this world that they have no knowledge of. And so we recognize that we needed to continue to be supportive, and not just from the emotional standpoint, but from the financial standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very proud of the fact that we have developed to the point that we can support our students with tuition assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Berkshire Taconic Foundation has partnered with us, mm-hmm. and the reality is that emergencies happen. And they have stepped in and agreed to provide emergency scholarships. Hmm. So
Not to mention the fact that the cost of college has just continued to skyrocket.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, I think I saw a headline the other day that there were a couple of colleges in Massachusetts that crossed the $90,000 mark per year in total college costs.
That's right.
I mean, it's not the same at every college, certainly.
Right.
And
that's right.
You know, that's why you have to shop around
and
find out what's best for you. But just that number, that headline number, is just shocking, right?
Yeah, it really is, you know. And you want, you know, each student to have a quality education. So whether it's at the 90,000 mark or at the 30,000 mark, you know, you want each student to have a quality education and a positive experience. So you have to be there financially to make it happen.
Yeah. And of course, this cohort of college students just graduating this year, think about the 4 years that they've had, right?
Mm.
And when they went into college, they would have started college that first pandemic year in 2020.
Yep.
So they faced other challenges also that maybe other generations might not have had to go through.
That is very true. Very true. And that's why during that period of time, we had one of our clinical social workers to host kind of almost like a situation like this, you know, on Zoom, you know, and folks would be calling in and doing check-ins and discussing their well-being and how they were surviving the COVID experience, you know, so.
Yeah. And then, of course, the ultimate goal, it sounds like, for ROPE is to encourage higher education learning, college attendance. Would you say that's pretty much true?
That's very true, because that we see as related to a career and being self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
So whether they opt to attend a vocational program or community college like BCC or one of the universities or colleges in our area or HBCUs, we support all of that because the bottom line is we want them to have that education and choose a career and to be successful.
Yeah. And for reference for our listening audience, if you haven't heard the term HBCU before, explain what that is.
Okay, thank you. I forget sometimes. So HBCUs are systems of college and universities, and they're historical Black colleges and universities. Basically, were started during the segregation time period in our country, in the South. Mm-hmm. They're still flourishing and clearly still have a purpose in the lives of many students.
Yeah. And how do they differ from some other universities? Like when, is the educational experience similar? Is it different? Is it targeted in some way to help people of color? And it's not obviously completely only Black attendees. Obviously, there's lots of other people that attend them, right? So just maybe break some of that down for us.
Yes, and the language often when you define HBCUs is primarily, to ensure that there is some inclusiveness there of other groups of people. And so it's, there's the standard education, at any college or university. And each of the colleges have their focus, Howard University is well known in terms of medical, the medical field and law.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in
Washington, D.C.?
Yes, Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. We have three students there right now.
That's great.
Yeah, pretty extremely proud of them. And
what a great place to study, too.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. It really is. And it's large, but see, then that's one of the distinctions. You have to make sure that you're one of those students that can survive, in a massive city setting,
And that's one of the things I think that also students in their, let's say, sophomore, junior year of high school is starting to think about college, really, and their families have to have those discussions, right?
Right, absolutely.
What kind of college? I'm going to go to college. Make that decision first, right? That's where I'm headed. And then, okay, what kind of college atmosphere do I fit in?
Mm-hmm.
That's very important. Not everybody wants to be in a Washington, D.C. or a New York City.
Right.
And then also some people don't want to be in a small town with a very small little college. It's, seems too hemmed in for them. They want more experiences. So it really is about how they fit in.
Yep, very much. And so, so it's the gamut of choices in HBCUs, large, small.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that they all have in common, again, is a good percentage of the administration, the professors are of color, not all, but some. And so there's that experience, again, that those students get to relate to those who may have had similar life experiences or have easier understanding of what they're experiencing as a first-generation college student. And then there's that piece of ensuring that they know their history. I had the opportunity to go to Atlanta University School of Social Work a long, long time ago. You did not leave AU without knowing about Dr. Du Bois. It was just a given that there was just certain history that you would know and you will understand.
Makes
and
sense.
Many other HBCUs are like that.
Yeah.
And
honestly, that history should be taught in every university.
That's
but and we hear, so much about what's going on in certain states like Florida, where they're really trying to squelch some of that history. I'm not sure exactly what the method is for that, why they're thinking that is a good thing to take history and say, well, no, we're going to basically whitewash that. We're going to make sure that you feel good about history. We're only going to give you the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that history, if you're reading history and you're not uncomfortable, you're probably not really reading the real history.
It's so true. I mean, it's the reality of humanity, So you can pretend and manipulate and change. So one group presents one way and another group presents another way. But it's, I definitely don't embrace that thought.
It's tough. It's tough to see it happening, in our modern times. You think we've maybe moved past some of that, but it's clear that we haven't in a lot of ways.
Very true.
A lot of work left to do. Shirley Edgerton is our guest here this morning on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM. And so there's a fair that happens. We just talked off mic on that for basically recruitment for HBCUs. And that's something that Rope and your whole group makes an effort to go to. Is that every year?
Yes. The Malcolm Bernard HBCU College Fair happens in New York City. And I'm so proud of our high schools here because Rope has partnered with them. And for the last 3 years now, I think it's been, we take a chartered bus. Mm. So students from both of the high schools as well as Rope travel to Manhattan. And it's a pretty full day. And as I was saying, the event has just grown. Like last year when we went, you just walk in, but we had to actually wait online for about 30, 45 minutes to enter the building because the numbers were just so large and, you know, you have to be concerned about the fire code.
Right.
So, yeah, but it's an incredible day. There must have been last year, there were at least 50 colleges, HBCUs, that were represented. So if you're a senior in high school, you're clear that an HBCU may be your choice, a particular one that will be represented at that event if you bring your transcript, any other documentation that you would need to apply for college. Mm-hmm. You can be accepted on the spot as well as receive scholarships right on the spot. It's an amazing opportunity. So we travel now with at least 30 kids when we attend those fairs.
That's a good bus full.
Yeah.
And one nice thing, I guess, about living here in the Berkshires also is that you can do a day trip to New York City.
Yes.
And make it meaningful, you know, have enough time to do everything you want to do. Go to the fair and then probably explore New York a little bit for a while, get something to eat, right? And it's probably a nice day.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it is. And like you said, the students love the exploration and the eating and the walking around. I'm rubbing my knees, but they're enjoying all the sights.
You must have some students that have never been to New York City before when they go to something like this. What's that like for them? Do you see it in their eyes?
I absolutely love that. I really do. That's one of the joys of what I do, is watching their amazement, you know, hearing their questions and their comments. And so, yeah, that's very exciting to witness their discovery. That's a beautiful experience.
How about when they step onto a college campus for the first time when you're with them? Because I know you've done trips to HBCUs. Yes. And let's talk about that also, because that's, as you mentioned, kind of an off-year thing. We've got a big thing we're going to talk about in a little bit that's happening in July. But last year you did a trip. I remember we talked about it here on the show. And it was kind of a long trip, right? And it was yes, HBCUs and it was also civil rights spots throughout Washington, D.C., south and to the west, right?
It was an incredible trip. And again, to witness the discovery and the connection that some of them have as they learn history, you know, it's a new awakening for a lot of the young people. And it's the same thing when you're in the campus of an HBCU, because part of the presentation is the history of that school, you know, and why it's in existence. So that's always a moment, you know, for a lot of our students. I can remember last year we had a student, she's biracial. And never left the Berkshires, pretty much Pittsfield.
Yeah, that's a common experience, I think.
It's true.
Here, but in other places in the country, too. People kind of, you know, stay close to home sometimes and don't get out enough.
That's right. That's right. And she, we were in Alabama, and she fell in love with, what was it, the college, university in Alabama. And I mean, she was like, oh my God, oh, look at this. It's so beautiful. It's this. And I mean, just everything was, was wonderment, you know, to her. And she ended up being talking about having a better understanding of who she is, you know, hearing all of that history throughout the trip and understanding, you know, the integration of it all in terms of her being a full person and understanding that she had options in terms of school, like the other students, you know, and that's the whole point of the trips. It's like, we're not telling you need to go to HBCU. We're just broadening your options.
Right.
You know, you can choose to go to a PWI, you know, like we just visited this, during the April break. We visited Simmons College University. We visited Bentley.
That?
Right in the Boston area.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. See, you know?
A lot of colleges in Boston.
Right. Exactly. So, and we, you know, we made those trips and we told them, you know, that that's, again, opportunity, options, and you need to know that all of these things are available to you and not to feel like finances is an obstacle.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, so, or anything else, actually,
right.
You know, it tends to feel walled off to some people, college, the college experience in general.
Yes.
You know, they need to sort of let that go and say, this is all out there.
Right.
Right. It's all out there. It's for you as much as it is for anyone else.
Right. And that's such an important lesson, what you just said, because often there's students, some students that don't hear that, you know, and they don't hear that you have the capability there, you know, in the household, they may not hear that just in the community at large, because they may present themselves in such a way that folks label them as like, you know, okay, you're going to do this. You're going to end up being it. And it's like, no, no. And rote, we tell them, no, you make that determination.
Right. And it does take work, right? I mean, and that's another part of the mentorship, I'm sure, is to say when you start early, you say, well, if you're headed in this direction, these are the things you need to do. You know, you need to put that stuff in place for yourself. You need to continue to work hard because, you know, college isn't for everyone, for the people that don't want it and don't work for it either.
Right.
You know,
that's
so it takes that as well.
Right. And that's an important piece as well, you know, helping them to understand commitment. Understand, one of the things we don't like to hear in the group is to blame others or to project all the, it's because of that one or it's because of this thing or that system. Well, okay. But the reality is that you don't let those things stop you. So we don't want to hear that it's because of that you didn't make that grade or because of this person or you're making choices.
Yeah.
So when you make choices, then you deal with the results of those choices. So
that's where the word empowerment comes from.
That's right.
Right? Because
that's
it really is coming from inside.
That's right.
It's just that sometimes it needs to be unlocked.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, and there are days they're like, Miss E, okay. You know,
they've heard enough sometimes. Well, you know, you can't say it enough sometimes. It's important to do that.
That's my feeling, and that's why we start off every monthly meeting with an affirmation. But I love it, though, you know, that when our college students have conversations with our scholars, meaning that our scholars are still in high school and middle school, often you will hear at least one or two of the alumni tell the scholars that they still use their affirmations daily.
Really?
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah, love just hearing that because it does make a difference.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get up in the morning and you're telling yourself, you know, what an amazing person you are and what a beautiful day you're going to have and you're going to make great decisions and, you know, you're going to engage with people in a positive way. It certainly does shape your day.
Mm-hmm. And it must be very powerful also for the scholars, for the younger students to hear those things from the college students as well as from the adults, right?
Yes.
And from the mentors. So they're all mentors essentially, but hearing it from someone who has gone through the program, still in the program, and giving back to those younger students. And there's a perfect role model right there. Hey, look, I was where you were, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, whatever. Look where I am now. Look what I'm doing. I'm almost graduating.
Yep.
This is going to be you.
Yep.
Right.
Very true. Very true. I had one of our alumni to text me a couple of weeks ago Miss E. M., and she's down at Tuskegee. Mm-hmm. And she's like, Miss E., I'm coming back for a few weeks, and I want to do something. What can I do while I'm in town? You know, I just love it when mm-hmm. they understand that they have a responsibility to give back and that they freely do that. You know, they'll let us know when they're going to be in the area and mm-hmm. how they want to engage with the very young ambassadors or, you know, spend some time with the scholars, mm-hmm. but just do something that they feel that will help.
Yeah. And to travel that far for mm-hmm. college, too. I mean, that's no easy jump in the car and travel down to Tuskegee, right? Talk about maybe some of the stipends that come from the NAACP and how that helps and affects some of the girls who are attending college mm-hmm. and help with some of those kinds of expenses.
Yeah, that is the partnerships that we've been able to develop in the Berkshires is just amazing. So this year, for the last, 22 years that the Women of Color Giving Circle now partner with, for the last 5 years, I think, with the NAACP and as well as the St. John's Masonic Lodge Number 10. Mm. And the three groups come together. And we celebrate these young people that are graduating from high school, and many of them are going on to a trade school or college or universities. Mm. So at the event, there's information that's provided to let them know that there are stipends and scholarships. So,
and there's an event like that coming up, right?
Yes.
Which is in May?
Yes, May the 18th.
Okay.
Yes, next Saturday after next it is. And at that event, there's always a dynamic speaker. This year is Nye Whitaker, mm-hmm. who is the executive director of the Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois Freedom Center in Great Barrington, mm-hmm. another incredible organization that I think it's going to have such an impact on. Impact in our community. So she will be our guest speaker. And then during the event, each of the students will get up and share their plans, you know, whether they plan to go to work or go to college, trade school. Mm-hmm. Those students that opt to go to a trade school or college, the NAACP circle and the lodge present, the NAACP offers stipends,
right.
And usually those stipends are anywhere from $1,000 to $2,500. And those going to a community college, you usually get about $1,000. Mm. And then those students going to four-year colleges, because we know they're more expensive,
yeah.
you know, usually about $2,000.
That's great.
And there's no
goes a long way, doesn't it?
Oh, my goodness, I'm telling you. And then the NAACP... It's not only that first year. They provide that stipend the freshman as well as the sophomore year, you know?
Well, I think you make a good point there because there's a lot of focus on sort of getting them over the threshold, if you will, right? After high school, into college. But the success can't stop there, right? You can't just have a good freshman year and then hit sophomore year and say, oh, I got no more money. I can't do the things I needed to do. I can't be successful. It's got to continue.
Yeah, very true. And I can't tell you the times that myself or some of the other mentors have gone to the NAACP and said, we need a little help here for, you know, one of our students. She can't purchase her books or... She's lacking in her tuition for that semester or whatever. Mm. So the NAACP has been amazing in the community with supporting our college students.
That's great.
And I also want to recognize the Berkshire Taconic Foundation because likewise, excuse me, they have stepped up. You know, I approached them about emergencies that happened with our students and, you know, they've been extremely responsive, and there's a scholarship in place now for emergency situations.
That's great. And these things do happen, and boy, that can derail a college experience, very, very quickly. So important to have that.
Yeah.
So that's an event that's happening on May 18th. And so that's coming up very, very quickly. So much we've talked about here with colleges and rope. I know we're going to talk about a special trip coming up in July, and I see we're approaching the top of the hour, so I think we're going to save that conversation for the second half. We're speaking with Shirley Edgerton this morning. She is from the founder, really, of Rites of Passage and Empowerment Program. And so many other things here in Pittsfield. We haven't even scratched the surface this morning. But we will continue our conversation with Shirley in just a moment. First, let's take that top of the hour break that we always do and thank our underwriters and do our station identification, all the good stuff. And we will return right after this. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Whoa, like, what exactly is happening here?
89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sondrini.com. And from Park Square Productions. Park Square Productions provides high-quality video and audio productions for businesses and nonprofit organizations throughout the Berkshires. Find more information about Park Square Productions and what they can do for you at ParkSquareProductions.com.
Do you have a favorite show on WTBR-FM? Did you miss the last episode? We've got good news for you. Most of our shows are now available on podcast. You can subscribe to your favorite and have the latest episode downloaded to your device automatically on Apple, Google, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or Overcast. Go to WTBRFM.com/podcasting and find out more today. WTBRFM, for the love of radio.
Hi, this is Lisa Torrey from RSVP. Do you need a ride to the doctors? Then let RSVP take you there. Our transportation program is a long-standing, reliable program that has been providing clients with rides to medical appointments for well over 50 years. To inquire about booking a ride or volunteering for RSVP, please call 499-9345.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Hi, my name is Bill Sturgeon. I am the host of WTBR's Morning Drive. We air every weekday morning, 7:30 to 8:30. The goal of my program is to inform, educate, and have a few chuckles along the way. We have wonderful guests, political, arts, actors, musicians, teachers. I look forward for you to listen in or watch us on PCTV. Thank you.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Tim's Lawn Care, it's almost time for spring cleanups. Tim's Lawn Care can also take care of your landscaping, lawn care, mulching, and more. Tim's Lawn Care, 413-281-4222 and online at timslawncarelandscaping.com.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM. Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you this morning, Friday, May 10th, and kind of a nice morning out there, not too hot or too cold, and it looks like it rained this morning. You'll see it's a little wet out there, and as I found out when I played the weather the first time during the show, it isn't as going to be as rainy as I thought, although we don't get the forecast all the way through Mother's Day, so let's hear what we've got in store from the National Weather Service, and we'll get right back to our conversation with Shirley Edgerton. Here we go.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, mostly cloudy. A chance of showers, mainly this morning. Highs in the upper 50s. East wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of rain 40%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Lows around 40. East wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Saturday, partly sunny. Highs in the lower 60s. East wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, not so bad after all. And I did hear that we're going to have a little rain in the morning on Mother's Day. So if you have any plans for that day, I'm hearing it's going to be clearing up later on the day. Don't quote me on that because I'm I only play a weatherman on Morning Drive here occasionally. But yeah, it would be nice to have a little nice weather on Mother's Day on Sunday. Morning Drive here again, and Shirley Edgerton, thanks again for joining me this morning. Always great talking with you.
My pleasure.
You have a major trip coming up, and it's one that you're no stranger to, let's say, it's a big trip to Ghana. So talk yes. about that. Talk about a little bit of the history of how you started with the program, bringing students for a trip to Ghana in Africa. Mm-hmm. It's a large trip, large undertaking, right? Mm-hmm. Talk about how you started with that and what the significance is.
Let's see. It's been probably at least, 15 years.
Wow.
My oldest daughter went to an HBCU. She went to A&T State University in North Carolina. Mm. And she had an opportunity to study at the University of Accra in Ghana. Mm. As a junior, and she fell in love with Ghana, did some volunteer work while there as a student with an educational collaborative program. When she returned home, continued to talk about Ghana and that experience and what it did for her personally in terms of her growth and development. She graduated from A&T that following year.
So that was a program through A&T
yes.
University that
yes.
they offered?
Yeah. Well, yeah. She applied for a fellowship to study at the university there.
Hmm.
And then she kind of created this whole opportunity for herself, you know, in terms of volunteering and getting to know the country.
Yeah.
And so when she returned home, you know, she shared what her experience was. And, you know, we were still developing and involved with Youth Alive. And mm-hmm. Rope had just started. And she started encouraging me to take this some of our scholars, our young women, to Africa. Mm. And because from her perspective, it was, you know, international travel, any travel is such an educational experience.
Absolutely.
And then there was that personal development, that understanding of history and making that connection mm-hmm. between an African and African American. It was just, and she had a very powerful argument, you know,
yeah.
as to why that would be an incredible opportunity for our girls.
Hmm.
And so that's what we decided to do. So our first trip to Ghana was about 8 years ago.
Hmm.
And we also decided while we were there, as she had done in terms of volunteering, that we would do likewise. And so we started volunteering at orphanages or schools that she has relationships with. She's been going back and forth now to Ghana 10 years. She goes like at least twice a year.
Oh, wow.
Does volunteer work there and, you know, has engaged herself in other ways there in terms of pastoral ministry.
Hmm.
So this trip, we will be leaving on July the 9th, and I'm sorry, the 8th,
mm-hmm.
and returning on the 19th.
Wow.
And
so that's a long trip, right?
It is.
11
it
days.
It yeah. absolutely is yeah. a long trip.
but it gives you a chance to do more while you're there on the ground.
Right,
than just sort of a superfluous, you know, stop in, look around, and then hop back on the plane. You're doing
that's
some
right.
stuff while you're there.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I find amazing about our scholars. They have such an interest to give, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We will spend a significant amount of time in an orphanage.
Mm.
They will volunteer in the classroom, play games with the students outside, board games, introduce them to new things. The students will introduce them, you know, to new activities, and they will. It's a great exchange of learning. They will have an opportunity to spend time at the University of Accra. They will engage with college students here, learn more about what it's like to be a young woman in growing up in Ghana. And then the young women from Ghana will learn their story.
I would think so, right?
Yeah.
That must be very interesting for them as well.
It really is.
To connect with their peers, essentially, in another country, in another culture.
Yes, it really is, you know, because you have that sisterhood story, you know, like, okay, so how are you treated in this environment? How are you treated in, you know, in that environment as a woman? You know, what are women allowed to do and not allowed to do in terms of social grace and policies? And, you know, so it's an incredible experience.
Yeah.
And also here at Jacob's Pillow, I met Oni Sowa, who is an incredible African dancer, choreographer, professor at the university. I, you know, it's amazing how small the world is.
Wow.
I first met him here at Jacob's Pillow.
Okay.
So he, when we go to Ghana, always we spend at least 2 hours with him. And he creates this African dance class. It's an African history class, and it's an African dance class, and it's just incredible. So every group that we take, all the students, you know, we spend at least 2 hours with him.
What is the culture and the government and sort of the atmosphere like in Ghana? Give us a little overview of that.
That's a good question, because this, I think this shifting, you know, just like in our country right now, there are some things, you know.
Is it a democracy?
Changes. Is it? It is a democracy. And you know, in terms of the social classes as they exist here, they exist there, but there's a lot of poverty. There's a, you know, you see a lot of hardworking folks, you know, trying to maneuver literally on the streets, selling their goods and their wares. And it's that's one of the things I have the greatest respect for, the culture of hard work, you know, that we see in Ghana. But yes, it's a democracy. It's a place where Dr. Du Bois was invited to.
Right. I was going to ask about that, because there's a major connection there with Dr. Du Bois.
That's right. And we go to his, what was his home site, you know, and we spend time in his library and his what was his home, where him and his wife are buried. And there's a great sharing of knowledge and understanding of why the president at that time, Nkrumah, the first president, brought him to Ghana to work on a dictionary, you know, and to share his wisdom and his perspective. So,
and it's interesting. I spoke with Dennis Powell about Dr. Du Bois here on the show a few times, and you know, we look back at him now at the accomplishments that he you know, founded, but at the time, he was really seen as sort of an agitator, right? As someone who was bucking the trend in a lot of ways. And now we look back and we say, well, you know, if it hadn't been for him and Dr. Martin Luther King and people like that, that, you know, we'd be in a much different situation now. And we have the wonderful connection with W.E.B. Du Bois right here in the Berkshires in Great Barrington. How lucky we are to have that.
Absolutely. You know, that's, and you're right. It's such an important part of history and what his contribution was, and his writings and, you know, his thoughts. So it's just amazing. So before we travel to Ghana, we always take a trip down to Great Barrington. And, you know, because we want our young people to understand that connection, just as you just said. You know, this is someone who was born right here in the Berkshires. You know, and then when we take the trip to Ghana, we continue that learning and make that connection and understand why he left the United States and why he came to Ghana and what the invitation was about. So it's powerful.
And remind us about that. What was it that brought him to Ghana?
Well, the president extended an invitation for, you know, and he was labeled a communist and pretty much banned, you know, banned here. And, you know, so he opted, because of the political differences, he opted to go to Ghana, you know, and to spend his rest of his life there, you know. I guess he had the same definition of retirement that I do, you know.
And that was a time, of course, when a lot of people were being labeled as communist. If you bucked the trend in any way, you found yourself on the wrong side, blacklisted and other things. So difficult time for America in a lot of ways, but probably more difficult for him in some ways.
I would definitely agree with that. You know, he lived that experience and, you know, felt like he was banished and, you know, and the man was just a genius.
Yeah, an intellectual.
He really was, you know. And then we also tour the slave castles and help. It's a visual, an emotional experience to actually spend time in those dungeons, and the host is usually excellent in explaining that history and what it was like to be in basically a cave, very little light, no windows, being starved, beaten, and then they literally walk them out and take them through the door that's called Entry of No Return, meaning that they would be walking out to the ships and that they would never return to the coast of Africa again. Yeah,
so that must be quite the solemn moment for anyone to experience, to look at that. And wasn't that also a site that President Obama visited? I might be wrong about that, but I thought that he did. I thought that he did go there and look through that same gateway and had that contemplative moment, right?
You're absolutely right. Yeah. I think he visited there at least two of the castles, and we usually visit both of them. And I think President Obama went to Elmira Castle. And same kind of experience and just... me standing there and walking from that dungeon through that entryway. I mean, you feel that, you understand that. And it's usually a very emotional moment, you know. There have been on some of the visits where we had to just cancel the rest of the day and just let the students sit with that and kind of process what they were feeling, because it was just... You know, it's one thing to read it, and it's another thing to see and to feel, to touch the walls.
Yeah.
And, you know, they explain how the stains, the blood stains are still in the ground. Mm. And, you know, so it's very emotional.
That's something you're not going to learn in a classroom, as in-depth as the teacher might want to go. And like you said, reading in a book, all important experiences, right? You have to understand these things and then, you know, to be there and to see them. You know, I think of the concentration camps, for example, in Poland and places like that, and people who have visited there. I have not, but I've heard people say, you know, you will not get that out of your mind. You see it. It's different than just reading about it or seeing a picture.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, I totally agree with that.
Mm.
You know, just being in that space, just makes a tremendous difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other piece about it is has developed is our young people understanding their privilege in this, you know, because they spend time at the school in an orphanage. So, you know, in orphans, you know that these are young people who are without their families and their needs are great financially and so on and so on. And so our young people come back understanding that they have access to free education, okay, that sometimes they choose not to take advantage of, you know. And they see these young people whose families have to pay for them to go to school, or either, you know, if they're in an orphanage, then that's a different story.
Yeah,
but
the
reality is that they see some of the struggles that exist in this part of the world, you know, and it helps them to understand that they have a responsibility, you know, in terms of this free education that they have, the opportunities that they have, you know.
Yeah.
They've heard stories of this young man who now is amazing. He's came to this country to be educated. He's a medical doctor now. So he's still right here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But we met him, you know, several years ago, and he told them the story of how at night he would study by the street light because he didn't have light in his house. So he would go and sit on the corners basically at night so he could do his work.
Wow.
You know?
That's dedication.
Absolutely. And it also, it helped our young people to understand that, you know, you have to take advantage of these opportunities that you have, you know? So that's also sometimes a very powerful experience for, particularly for our students who may not take school as serious, you know?
Yeah.
And this kind of gives them some encouragement.
And inspiration, I would think, too.
Yes,
right?
Without a doubt.
Maybe that's the spark for someone who is on the fence about maybe higher education, going to college or something else, and then seeing that and then saying, yeah, you know, maybe I could do that. Maybe it's right there in front of me and I should just grab it.
Yeah, very true, very true. Yeah, I, my, you know, we have a young woman now who, she graduated about 6 years ago now, okay, from high school, from Taconic High School. Mm. She wasn't the greatest student, you know, had some life challenges and so on and so on. So, but we managed to get her into a school, you know, it was HBCU. Mm-hmm. And one of their specialty was working with students who were academically challenged, maybe not have given their best, and there might have been an array of reasons why they didn't. Mm. And at that time, Superintendent Jake McCantless, you know, I told him I need a letter of support for this student. He wrote this letter. We were able to get her into this summer program at this school. And the whole idea was if she was successful in his summer program, she could enter the school in the fall. She was very successful in the summer program. Mm. 4 years later, she graduated Dean's List, honor student.
Wow.
Every semester, she was on the Dean's List, you know? And, you know, we're so proud of her. Yep. And we often, you know, sometimes she probably gets tired of it, but we use her as an example, you know, to some of the girls. It's like,
it's a small price to pay.
Yeah. This is true.
Right?
Yeah. This is true.
But that could be the spark. And that's what the empowerment and the encouragement, the mentorship is all about, right? Is getting those opportunities. You don't even know when they're going to come up, but you have an opportunity like that. And one effort could change someone's life in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Yeah.
And that is so true in that moment. Mm. And you just don't know where, when, and how, you know? And that's why travel, I think, is so important to the organization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether, like I just said earlier, we were in Boston during April school break. And so we visited the Boston, you know, State House, you know, because we wanted our young people to know this is a major seat of government.
That's
here,
right.
You know?
Your seat of government.
Yeah, exactly.
Your state.
Yeah. And Representative Tricia Farley Bouvier had organized things for us, and
great.
They had a great tour. And, you know, so that was an excellent opportunity for them. And then we spent some time at the Dr. King's, the embrace, that sculpture that's there. And it's so interesting, you know, the different opinions about that. But I think it's beautiful. Mm. I really do. I think it's beautiful. I understand the meaning behind it. And I don't, you know, well, that's...
Yeah. Well, good art will engender varied opinions, right? And that's part of the beauty of art, is that you get to talk about it and you get to say, well, what do you think of this? You know, there isn't one opinion about everything.
Right.
That's the interesting thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, and now talk about back to Ghana for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
How do you manage it logistically? Mm-hmm. How do you manage it financially? Because this is a big undertaking, getting how many students to Ghana and for 11 days?
Yes. We have a total of 30 people traveling with us. Out of that 30, 17 will be between the ages of 9 to 19.
Okay.
That's the age group that will be traveling with us. Mm-hmm. And the others are mentors. Mm. We will be staying at a very secure site that my daughter identified a few years ago. It's a beautiful site, you know, very safe, but not only safe, you know, very attractive and the pool and all those things that young people enjoy, you know. It's also a place where the mentors and myself, more the mentors than me probably, can cook, you know. So, you know, that way we can be try to be a little efficient in terms of our resources and respect everybody's diets. So we will have opportunity, of course, to explore the food culture in Ghana, but also this way in terms of cooking at our site. It's just very beneficial in a lot of ways. So and then we will have a bus at our disposal, and a guide. Who pretty much goes with us daily. We have someone that's on the ground there who puts a lot of things in place. So my daughter usually goes over, like she went in, I think it was February, and started to put things in place. And then there's someone there.
I would think it would be quite an advanced job, right, to put this all together. And, you know, you just mentioned safety, obviously number one, right? But then food, you got to have food. You got to have lodging. You got to be able to transportation, get people around to different sites to identify what those sites are. You've done some of it before, but I'm sure there's always something new that comes up. And then just to deal with, you know, getting a taste of the local culture, of meeting people, of maybe hearing music or seeing entertainment, right? Is any of that worked in?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, we will have the dance class at the university, but we also will spend some time in what they call the Upper Volta region. And, you know, there's the African drummers that, you know, that'll be in the community. We hope to go to, there's a plan to spend some time at a village and, you know, and engage in just the day-to-day experiences of being in a village, including dancing and watching how the kente cloth is made. We'll have that experience. We'll go to the marketplace. And so, yeah, so we're really trying to have the full experience of being in Ghana and everything there is to offer culturally.
What are your scholars like when they come back? What kinds of things do they talk about? How do you see the differences in them from the time that they left to the time they come back? Do you see some significant changes?
It's and it varies, you know. Some come back, well, because they some of there's this culture shock that happens for some of them. Major, you know, because of just everything is so very different, you know, in terms of the people, starting with the people.
And your daily things that you do here change when you go over there.
That's right. You know, so the environment is different. Even being in they're in an educational experience and environment because that's where we do our service learning project, but that's even different, you know, in terms of learning and how things are set up, the structure that they use. So, So there's this culture shock that a lot of them go through.
It's an adjustment.
Yeah, and so
coming back, there's probably also an adjustment, right?
Right. There is, you know. And there's an adjustment. Then they go through this thinking period of comparison. They compare things. They have a deeper understanding about humanity, which is, I think, is always amazing that a lot of them, because we've even had days where they want to spend more time at the orphanage than they do going sightseeing.
Wow, okay.
You know, and that's just very touching. You know, when that happens. And we usually, every trip, there's at least two or three of the girls who's like, no, I don't want to do anything else. I just want to stay here. I want to come back here. And they just want to do and give.
Interesting.
Give. It really is. So, you know, they come back home and they're inspired. They're feeling more appreciative. They have a better understanding of the world. And they also understand that everyone, you know, there are differences wherever you go, you know.
Right.
And so Yeah, it's a powerful experience that extends to every aspect of their lives.
That's probably the greatest impact right there. Yep. Shirley Edgerton, I want to thank you for being here. Believe it or not, we're almost out of time. So that trip is July 8th through the 19th, and I'm sure that we'll have you back on after that at some point and talk about the experiences. Maybe a scholar or two could join you on the show. We can talk to them as well and ask them some questions. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. And there's our theme song. I knew I would find it somewhere. Shirley Edgerton, thanks again for being on the show. Always great talking with you. Good luck with the trip. Good luck with the graduates event on May 18th, was it?
Yes.
And all the other great things going on. We didn't even get to talk about Youth Alive. We'll do it another time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend out there. And we will see you soon next week, indeed. Take care. And happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there.